All right, got this started. It is Wednesday, September the 24th, the year 2008. We're at in Blytheville, Arkansas. This is Brady Banta, and I am conducting an interview with Marion Haynes. Mr. Haynes, before we get started, I want to make sure that you are aware that I am tape recording this interview and that I have your permission, your consent to tape record the interview.
Yes, sir, you do.
All right. As a way of getting started, if you would you just tell me a little bit about your background, who you are, when you were born, where you were born, what your educational work background is, so we have an idea of who you are.
Okay. Well, I was born in Blytheville, Arkansas, October 13th, 1949, my family lived in a little town north of Blytheville called Yarborough. We lived on a cotton soybean farm. My dad started farming up there with my grandfather. He originally started farming with mules a little past the turn of the last century. And I went to school at Blytheville High School, and I went to several colleges. And now I work for I was a cotton farmer until about 1995. And of course, I had college background, but I got interested in archaeology because that was a stimulus that I would see on the farm was the artifacts and things in the fields. And so I got interested in archaeology, and I started working on and off with the Arkansas Archaeological Survey, basically first as a volunteer. And then when the job came up here as an archaeological assistant at the Blytheville Research Station, I was able to obtain it, and now I've been working for them ever since.
Okay. Growing up on this cotton farm, did your father employ Mexican migrant labor?
Well, my father, he didn't bring or contract any to be brought up. That was basically my uncle, the gentleman's son you will talk to here in a little while, Don Stallings. He was basically the person that I understand it. Of course, I was a young man, so I'm a young boy. I didn't really know what was the interaction, but my dad either contracted whatever through my uncle to have some of the laborers brought out to our field to chop cotton, I remember. And they also picked cotton. Of course, the mechanical cotton picker had just basically gotten a foothold in here. And that was the way we ended up interacting, the way I understand it. Don may be able to tell you more later about that.
Did you actually observe the braceros working in the fields?
Yes, I did. I watched them. Of course, that's been a long time ago, but I know I saw them working. I know they picked cotton, and they were here in the spring, evidently, to chop cotton. When, of course, we call it chopping, which means hoeing cotton or weeding it. They were very, very hard workers, and there was not a one of them that, you know, slacked off or anything. I mean, you know, they had a work ethic that evidently came with them, of course. And matter of fact, to pick 400 pounds of cotton, especially at that time when the cotton wasn't this nice hybridized cotton we've got now that's really growing wild and tall and great, back-breaking labor. My dad, I remember him saying that one of them had actually picked, I think, 450 pounds in a day, and that was like 100 pounds over what a normal person or people we were used to picking cotton did. So, you know, that made me turn my head and go like, whoa, these guys are really here to get ahead, you know, to work. And also I remember in the spring a story. I don't know if I was exactly involved with this, but we had rented some land off the natural levees here back in the back swamp, and it was the first time we really came heavily in contact with a weed called the cucklebur. And they took a group of the people down there, the men down there, to chop cotton, and they had never seen it evidently, or had never experienced chopping cotton, even though they were from probably northern Mexico and southern Texas. The cocoa burrs had come up about as thick as the cotton did. And they got out of the truck, and everybody got them a row and started chopping. They were chopping down the cotton initially and were leaving the cocoa burrs. Now, that's embarrassing to say as a farmer that you'd let things get in that kind of shape. But anyway, of course, my dad or whoever was there stopped them, and without being able to, I don't know if he had an interpreter there with him or not, but he got them straightened out. And once he put them on, that the cotton stood and the cocoa burrs fell, they went on no problem after that. And that's basically what I remember about the field experiences with them.
Do you have any firsthand memory of what their living accommodations were?
Well, Don can tell you a whole lot more about that because his dad, within a mile of his house, there near the Reese community or Clear Lake, southeast of Blytheville, they had the barracks, they called them. The Mexican barracks is what they were called. And they were long wooden sheds. I can vaguely remember them, built kind of like long shotgun houses, probably with a hallway down the middle. I don't know that I were ever in them, but they were tin roofed. And there were, if I remember right, there was only one shade tree there. It was kind of just placed out in the middle of a cotton field on a gravel road. Like I say, that's who we got the labor from was my uncle, and he's the one that had the barracks. So Don will be able to tell you more about
that. When they would come, when they came to the fields to work, what would they bring with them for their noon meal?
Well, I remember them coming to our house there at Yarborough, and the thing was that they were in these open trucks, what we call on the farm bob trucks. I can't remember if they were double axle or single axle, but I remember their cowboyish looking hats, straw hats, you know, and that was something you didn't see a lot around here. And it was amazing to me that they rode up from down that far, and actually if you'll think about it, that was on two lane roads at that time, not the interstate, in the open trucks. And these trucks were not your normal, you know, Arkansas soybean truck. They were decorated somewhat. They were fancied up. And as I would call it. And then they came to our house, unloaded off the truck, and they put their meals on a shelf in one of our sheds there. And I remember them being in brown paper bags and seeing the grease or oil soaking into the bag, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Because, you know, it kind of looked pretty good to me. But one of our dogs actually pulled one of them down. Of course, we stopped her, but she had already torn into one, and it was a first time I guess I had seen either a burrito or whatever it was, but it looked like it was soft flour tortilla type with a white bean paste in it, and they smelled wonderful, you know. And of course I didn't get to sample any of them, but I do remember talking to some of the guys the best I could, just with visuals, you know, cues and things. But no, I never got to eat any of it, but they really smelled good and looked good. And I guess it was, except for eating canned hot tamales and things, that was my first experience with any Mexican food. You know, there were no Mexican restaurants here at that time.
Roughly what time of year was it when these people arrived?
That I don't really remember because we only had, you know, limited interaction with them. Of course, you knew they were here. Something just came to me about food. They would always trade at Safeway stores. Now, I don't know why that was. Now, I asked my mom. I said, you didn't see them at Kroger. You didn't see them at what we have a local store called Hayes. I think they were here then. But they would go to Safeway. And she said it was because she had heard it was because the Safeway store chain was in the Southwest, too. And they knew it. And they would trust it, and they would go there, you know. But that's just something that just came back to me, yeah, that they would trade, and you would see the trucks parked at the Safeway store down on the next to the courthouse here in Blytheville. That's basically all I remember about that.
Do you have memories of going to Blytheville on Saturday and the Mexican laborers coming to town at the same time?
I remember seeing them in town, but of course, again, we didn't react you know, interact with them very much in town. And I really don't know what was there to entertain them, because I imagine all the movie theaters were in English. You know, there were three in town at that time. And I remember seeing them in town, but, you know, it was just a passing thing with us, you know. I mean, we knew they were going back, and, mm-hmm. you know, of course, they didn't bring any of their children or wives with them, so it was just the men. And, you know, that limited you kind of on interacting with them, being an 11, 12-year-old boy. At least I think I was 11 and 12. Might have been a little earlier than that. Might have been in the late 50s they were here. Of course, Don can tell you more about that. No, I don't remember a whole lot about them. I remember seeing them in, you know, in town, and knowing that's what they were here for, was for labor.
Do you have any memories of any difficulties between the Mexican laborers and the local residents?
Of course, I didn't live in Blytheville. I was protected out at Yarborough. But the thing is, I do not remember any stories in the paper or anything of troubles between, you know, any of the groups of people that lived here. I think they were fairly well, you know, well-behaved, and the people here understood that they were here for labor, and maybe, you know, the people that were resentful of it didn't really, you know, say much about it. I do remember stories, at least a couple of times I heard that there had been a couple of murders out at the barracks, and it was them on their cells, you know. I mean, they had gotten drunk, probably the only entertainment they had, and gotten into gambling fights and things, and I think it was stabbings.
But that wasn't anything that would have been particular to the Mexicans.
No.
Any other group of laborers here might have done the same thing.
You take any other group of 100 men and stick them out somewhere and give them some alcohol and give them some dice, and I think that's what you're going to get, you know, and especially if they're 6,000 miles away from home or whatever. No, it's not particular to them. But, I mean, I remember that happening. But nobody worried. I didn't worry about it. I didn't hear anybody worrying about them, you know, coming through or bothering anything or anything. We weren't worried about them.
You weren't worried about the situation?
No.
Okay. To the best of your recollection, what was approximately the last year that they were here in sizable number?
You know, I can't really remember the day because, you know, I had my mind on other things, but it seemed like the late 50s is when it tapered off. And then I'd heard something about some laws or something had been mm-hmm. changed, and it either had just petered out on its own. It just got stopped. I'm not sure whether that was true or not.
Okay.
You know.
Any other vivid memories that come to mind of experiences in having these people here?
Well, only thing, it's not a, you know, vivid, but I remember people saying that it was remarkable that one of the first things the men, especially the most responsible ones of them, and I think they were all pretty responsible, they would try to buy a foot pedaled, of course, at that time, Singer brand sewing machine. And the way I understood it, I don't know if they took them back on the truck with them or they had them boxed up and paid to have them shipped home. That was one of the big items they wanted. And the only thing we could figure out is they, you know, if they sent the money home, they were afraid that it might not get used for the right thing, or, you know, they wanted these machines to go home so the women could start up cottage industries and make a little bit of money mm-hmm. doing seamstress work and such. But that's, like I say, I only had a limited experience with them. But I do remember people remarking, you know, everybody's going to always watch everybody else's behavior. And we watch what they bought, you know, like going the Safeway, buying the Singer sewing machine. And other than that, you know, they would just pretty well fit in, you know. They were no bother to most of us that I knew of.
All right.